SVC Media.
Welcome to the iGaming Daily Podcast, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market.
The Grand National, arguably Britain's biggest betting event and the most significant in its racing calendar, took place over this weekend. But horse racing itself is at a crossroads when it comes to securing its future sustainability and growth. The sport's attendance numbers have been falling in recent years, and the impact of COVID continues to bite into its finances, whilst its stakeholders are also concerned about how incoming affordability measures could affect its situation going forward. Meanwhile, another huge betting event is getting closer by the day, the UEFA European Championship 2024, taking place in Germany. But with the UK tightening the leash around betting advertising, what should bookmakers consider ahead of the tournament? I'm Ted Ormclay. Welcome to iGaming Daily, where I'm here with my insider sport teammates Callum Williams and Kieran O'Connor. But before we get into these topics around racing and football, I should mention our sponsor, Optimove. Optimove is the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market, and 56% of the EGR Power 50 personalised player experiences with Optimove. So, we'll start off with the Grand National, obviously just concluded at the weekend. I think Ion Maximus won, got quite a good win out of that, and I imagine a lot of punters did too. So, Kieran, I'll just start with you, because I know you didn't make it to the Grand National itself, but you were at Aintree over the weekend. On Friday, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah.
How would you say the experience was? What did the turnout seem like ahead of the big day?
I'd say it was a fantastic atmosphere anyway. The sun was shining, drinks were flowing, everyone was dressed nice and smart. I would say I've never been to Aintree before, so I can't compare it to other years, but it was very busy on the track. There was a lot of people queued up to put bets on all throughout the day. It was a really good day, a really good experience.
So obviously the reason I asked you about the turnout was just because one of the things that's often been said about horse racing in recent years is that it's been struggling to get the attendance that it used to. So I was just wondering to start off with, guys, if you could give the listeners a sort of an overview of what issues has horse racing been facing over the last few years, and what are the sports stakeholders, what are their main concerns about its future? Kieran, if we can start with you on this.
So I think, you can't really talk about any sports and the issues they face other than obviously mentioning the obvious, which is the pandemic. Racing like football and rugby, they'd struggle when the pandemic hit. I know they tried to fight against it. I think I went to a race in Haydock, which was like in between one end pandemic lockdowns and another one. And it did really sort of hinder the experience when you were there. You could only sort of drink if you had a table, but there wasn't enough tables for everyone to drink. It did hinder the experience. So I think the pandemic is definitely one of the big sort of barriers that the sport has faced in recent times, and that obviously has had an effect on the finances of the sport. And then also I feel like there was an article by the Racing Post going all the way back to 2022, which is just after the pandemic, obviously, and I think Barry Hearn, the famous boxing promoter, he's a big lover of racing, and he said that there needs to be sort of a high level of commercialisation in the sport, which I think if you asked a lot of people, they'd probably say the same around that time, and probably now as well. You look at football, you look at the NFL, these big sports that are doing really, really well. The one thing that they're all doing really well is sort of commercialisation and getting the adverts in, bringing these big names to the sport and really making it the best it can be. And then I would say a more recent concern, especially in the UK, is probably the BHA is struggling to compete against Ireland, especially in jump racing. I mean, you go back to Cheltenham a few months ago, I think it was Willie Mullins?
Yeah, I think that's right.
He absolutely dominated the competition. He come out of that with over 100 wins, obviously in his career. And there's now been a 9-year gap since Britain last won the Prestbury Cup, which is a cup that they hold at Cheltenham, which pretty much pits the Irish trainers and the English / British trainers against each other. And whoever gets the most wins out of that comes out on top. And it's been 9 years since the BHA, or they have won it. So Yeah,
it's an interesting one to note from a sporting perspective, that, and I think we've seen it in some like bookmaker marketing as well. Like Paddy Power had quite a good advert a while back, didn't they, with some, I can't remember who was in it, it was Colin Meaney, the actor, and they were sort of taking the mick out of how, saying like Cheltenham is Irish territory, you know, because of all that. But then obviously it's also been facing some, there's some regulatory concerns, aren't there, Callum, kind of relating to our other beat payments. So I was just wondering if you could give us a bit of a breakdown of that one.
Yeah, so gambling white paper, that dropped, I believe it was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah,
end of April, April last year, yeah. And a main talking point of that white paper was affordability checks. Now, the British Horse Association, they don't want it, but there's a level of concern surrounding affordability checks. I mean, they do believe that it's going to be a major driver, a driving away point for punters when it comes to the sport. And obviously we know betting and horse racing so intertwined, it's a main revenue driver for the sport. So there's just a really big overall concern when it pertains to affordability checks. Horse racing is concerned in the impact it can have on the bookmaker and its finances and its influence on the sport. And then that probably relates back to Kieran's point then about outside commercialisation. I think there's been a dependency on betting marketing and betting sponsorship over the past, how long you want to go back for. So I think maybe them, the BHA, not looking for outside commercialised sponsorship is maybe catching up to them at this point. They've also cited that almost up to 1,000 rural jobs might be lost as part of the affordability checks. And yeah, I think they're kind of citing a whole widespread type of impact it's going to have on, because you're saying about the land-based betting stalls as well. I think I went last year to Grand National as well, and I think there was still a lot of lines for those, the stalls, the betting stalls as well. So yeah, that could hinder bets being placed there on the racetrack. And then they also did a survey about a couple months ago, and they said they surveyed four in 10 people said they were prepared to use a black market operator if the if affordability checks are too stringent. So it's the black market is obviously something that we know exists, we know we're trying to stamp out, but it's also a very real possibility that punters don't want their personal information or personal data being too overly shared with these operators. So I think it's something that I think the government will have to work in tandem with the British Horse Association. So it's just a matter of time when we come ahead with these new regulations.
Yeah, it's interesting what you both are mentioning, kind of like, yeah, these knock-on effects. Obviously, racing is very dependent on that betting levy that the operators pay out their revenue every year, as well as also selling media rights. But yeah, it's chiefly from the levy, and as you also mentioned, Callum, the sponsorships.
Yeah.
And then that kind of links into how, yeah, like you mentioned, Kieran, there's been a bit of a lack of commercialisation, sort of looking for different avenues other than that. It seems to become very reliant on that. What was a very comfortable relationship, as you noted, Callum, for many decades, which is now getting threatened by these regulations. And it's like there isn't really a plan B almost. So then, so building on this, Kieran, how do you think racing, how can racing sort of improve its standing and engage of younger audiences? There's been a couple of like attempts and some new ideas coming in, but like these haven't always been too successful.
No, let's start with the Racing League. It was you actually brought that. I actually hadn't heard of that, which maybe shows how unsuccessful it really was. But the Racing League, as Ted told me before, it had some success, but it didn't really have the impact that they sort of wanted. The idea was to try and bring like sort of a regional team concept to the sport, sort of playing on what you get in football and other sports in sort of a league system. But it didn't really work just with how the sports ran. I mean, yeah, you have people who sort of follow horses to different tracks, but I don't think you're going to get people who honeysuckle till I die sort of thing, following on like on away days and stuff like that. So that didn't really have the same concept. It didn't really work the way they wanted it to. A sort of newish thing they've started to go for is more sort of ambassadors. And then also, I suppose, you've got ITV Racing, who've done their part. I remember in around 2019, they hired Chris Hughes from Love Island, who had a breakout role in 2019. Obviously, he had history of horse racing in his family. He's actually quite knowledgeable, to be fair to him. But just sort of bringing them big names in does help a little bit. And then also you've got the sort of concerts that they've started holding at racecourses. I'll be honest, I was going to book one at Haydock, and I saw that, I can't remember who was on, but I decided not to go because there was a concert on at the same time, and I thought, I want to be there for the racehorses.
Cost you a couple more quid, yeah.
So I feel like the concerts are something that they've tried, and they probably will. One thing I will mention is that Ladies' Day, like I went to, I do think that the average age is probably lower at Ladies' Day than it is at the Grand National.
Yeah.
Obviously, they have the entertainment and sort of horse racing is the afterthought anyway. For a lot of people there.
Yeah, I was going to add on that as well. Just quick note that my mum and dad actually went to Ladies' Day on Friday, and they said they couldn't believe the amount of young kids that were there.
Yeah,
so, I mean, take it from their perspective, but yeah, they said there was quite a lot of young people there.
Okay, that's interesting. And so it's clear that some of that sort of stuff is having an effect, because turning it into more of like an overall entertainment experience rather than just about the racing, which I guess is something you do often see in some US sports, isn't it? Of like the sport itself isn't always the main event. It's kind of like the experience built around it. I know that we've sort of noted that, you noted this earlier, Kieran, of the whole commercialization argument of like how racing could learn from other sports, and particularly like American ones, of how they sort of utilize data and commercial relationships and things like that. I think we're kind of seeing that with, I spoke to Will Woodham's CEO of Fitstairs a few months back about the racing app that they've launched, and he talked about how he thinks it's really important for them to look at how the Premier League and how like the NFL and all that have utilised these new sort of commercial strategies, and have utilised in particular data as a way of and content, short form content, as a way of engaging audiences, particularly younger audiences who are big consumers of that. So I guess building on this, guys, just to bring this part one to a close, I'll start with you, Callum. Where do you see horse racing in 10 years' time? Do you think it can sort of regain its place as Britain's biggest betting market and betting product again?
I think football's there to stay. I think it's there to consolidate that number one status now, because there's more betting props, player props that are being added to betting sites year upon year. So I just think the game itself, football, is by far and away the biggest in the country, and then it's obviously the biggest in the whole world, isn't it? So you've always got tournaments like the Champions League every year, the Premier League, and then you've also got, which we're going to come onto in a bit, obviously the Euros and World Cup every 4 years. So there's always these major events coming about year left. The league itself, the Premier League, is just getting bigger money, bigger eyes, bigger revenue. Obviously, betting operators want to take advantage of those increasing viewerships and just create more of a betting experience for the punters themselves. And so I just feel like where football's kind of slowly but surely modernising itself with all these new rules and such forth, I think like horse racing, while I still think it will be strongly second, I think it will be comfortably second, in my opinion.
And what about you, Kieran? What's your thoughts on that?
I'd probably agree with Callum, to be honest. I can't really see any sport overtaking football in that sense. Obviously, racing is still massive. I think every household probably had a bet, even if you don't, not a betting household, just by tradition, every household probably asked you, oh, do you want a horse on for the Grand National? It's definitely here to stay. I think from a commercialisation point of view, they could do a lot more, and they could learn from the sports, like you said. It's not going to overtake football, but as a tradition, at least in the UK, I don't think it's going anywhere.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree. I think it's always going to have its place, but I don't think it's ever going to regain that that position as the biggest betting market. I think it lost in either 2018 or 2019, from what I remember. Football is definitely the more varied one. It's so ingrained in the national culture as well, within the UK and various other countries. So it's just, it has cemented itself as the ideal betting market. But yeah, we'll be moving on to football next, actually. But that's it for part one. We'll have a quick break and get back to talk about the Euros. And we're back, and as promised, moving on to the next topic, which is the probably the biggest sports tournament this year coming up, the UEFA European Championship 2024, taking place across Germany. obviously, as football, as we've said in the last part, is probably the biggest betting market in the world right now, not just in the UK. And with that comes a lot of commercial opportunities and a lot of marketing opportunities as well. So, Kieran, I'll just start with you. Looking across the board, what marketing opportunities does the Euros pose for brands, and what activity have we already seen in this area?
Well, exposure, obviously. The 2021 had over 5 billion views total and around 300 million watched the final between England and Italy. So exposure for brands is the main thing, and you do get it at this tournament. We've already seen Betano announced as the main sponsor of the UEFA Euros. We've not seen a lot of marketing from sort of the operator point of view, but the Premier League is still going, Champions League is still going. I wouldn't expect to see anything from the Euros until they sort of finish. Maybe you will. Maybe they'll start to try and bridge from them competitions to the Euros soon, but we've not really seen much yet. But we all know that people like Paddy Power will have some interesting campaigns lined up. Obviously, England and Scotland are the only two teams in the UK who will be competing this year. And although Wales and the Irish teams won't be, it still sort of leaves bookies plenty of options for some localised marketing schemes that we've seen, like the ones we've sort of seen in the past. There is also Coca-Cola has been announced. Bitburger, I think I'm pronouncing it right.
Quite a big local sponsor there in Germany.
Yeah, you've got Lidl, and then I think there's one with Callum's favourite team, which is Hellman's in a very weird partnership with Jack Grealish.
Yeah, so trying to get they're trying to get everyone out for the barbecues, aren't they, in the summer, which, I mean, judging by this weather so far, we're going to get rain, aren't we, all summer? But yeah, that was quite of a tongue-in-cheek one, really, with Grealish. I think Hellman's kind of knew what they were doing with getting Jack on board there. But this Hellman's, they're really localising that to the UK. Obviously, we get quite excited, don't we, when we see a bit of sun. We want to go and put a barbecue on, so they've obviously took advantage of that. But it's pretty good local... localised marketing type stuff there in the UK for the Euros.
And then kind of on this marketing angle, what do you reckon, Kieran, what should operators factor into this? What requirements do you reckon they should have, like, when crafting a marketing strategy?
Yeah, I feel like we sort of say this with like most tournaments, but it really is sort of the player prop bets and specials like that, where you're sort of playing and you're sort of leveraging these well-known stars. It may have people support at club level, using them into the tournament. So that could also be English players, but that also goes for people like, I'm trying to think who's even at the Euros now, and I've just lost myself, but all the big stars in the Premier League are playing, and they're all there for the countries. They can use them for these player props. I think looking at the bets with Bet365, England are currently favourites to win. Ahead of France, who are 7-2, Germany 6-1, Spain and Portugal are 8-1. And then there was actually a webinar the other month, SBC webinar the other month, and they sort of talked about the sort of challenge of using the Euros and bridging that over to the sort of common ball at that tournament, and how they can keep customers engaged through the summer. Because it's a big, big summer of football.
Yeah, to Copa America in June. It kicks off in June, yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously going on from that, I know this is something we've talked about in, like you say, with webinars and at SPC events for as well, but it always presents that opportunity, like that customer acquisition opportunity, to get some people in and then retain them as like continuing customers for the following Premier League season, Champions League, or in obviously international companies in Germany, getting people into bet on the Bundesliga in France League One and so on. Obviously, something that we've talked about, the marketing here. I think this is something that got announced this week by the UK's Advertising Standards Authority. I think this is something really important for a lot of companies to consider in the UK, and that's the CAP code, which like regulates advertising and marketing over here. You can't feature anyone in betting ads if they're under 25 years old, and that includes footballers. So obviously that's going to restrict quite heavily what a lot of operators can do with kind of what we're talking. talked about with the players, like they can obviously using them in player props and putting special offers on them once you're on the site or in the shop, that's fine.
Yeah.
But in terms of advertising on the TV, on the radio, online, operators could get told to remove that.
So Phil Foden, for example, he's 23. Yeah. Mm. He's 23, he won't be able to be putting
a
Betfred figure example.
Exactly, And then I think it also goes a bit wider than that, that anyone who's kind of judged to have a strong appeal to under-18s, you can't use. So just, you know, they might be over 25, but because they're a really big name and if they play for like Man City or United or whatever, I'm not going to use my own team as an example, Nottingham Forest, because they won't be. But, you know, they're going to be recognisable to a lot of under-18s.
Yeah.
So that you kind of walk in that fine line between whether it would be allowed or not. Obviously, though, it's still, like you've mentioned, Kieran, it still leaves a lot of opportunity for people for the bookmakers to create, like, prop bets and sort of special offers and things around these players. But they do need to be careful when it comes to their marketing. So kind of on this marketing sort of standpoint, to be fair, Callum, we've seen, you know, quite a few changes over the past couple of years, especially in the UK, but also elsewhere. So how would you say the situation has changed for operators since the last Euros? What developments have affected the landscape for some of these companies?
If you take your mind back to Euro 2020 and 2021, most of the England games, I think all but one England game was all held in England. So obviously the British market is the British betting market is one of the strongest, most regulated ones in the world. Operators in Germany who have already set up shop in Germany, they'll understand what the regulatory landscape is over there. I think operators looking to try and get in there before Euro 2024 this summer, I think they may have a bit of a adjusting period to learn with some of the regulations, because I do believe, not to the best of my knowledge, that that there used to be state-by-state owned regulations. So Bavaria, for example, would have its own different set of regulations to another state in Germany. But over the past several years, it's been more nationwide now, a regulatory bill, so they all fall under the same one. And one of my colleagues in the office told me before that the black market in Germany is quite big. Obviously it's quite bigger than the UK one, but it's still quite... prominent over there in Germany. So I think operators and punters alike going over to Germany will have to be wary of some of the changing of regulations it is from the UK to Germany, because it's not as strong, I would say, as the UK. It's more confusing, but also on top of COVID regulations, of course, I mean, you may be going to start to see an increase in brick and mortar bets. Which is kind of almost a given, right? Even in Germany or back home over here. I think this will also maybe also serve as a test to see whether, because the Premier League's introducing the front of shirt gambling sponsorship ban in the summer of 2026 for the 26-27 season. So, This may be the chance for operators to then maybe try and dabble the waters for this tournament in terms of sponsorship. I know infotainment stuff in Serie A in Italy. That's quite good. That's quite a good way around regulations.
Mm. Like kind of test new sort of way, because obviously you don't have front of shirt sponsors in the Euros all the year, because it's all national teams. So you mean like, it could be kind of a way for them to like test some new marketing techniques and some like fan engagement techniques and stuff like that. That's quite an interesting point. Bringing this section to a close, if we can just stick with you, Callum, for now. So in the face of some of these new requirements, how big is the Euros as a marketing opportunity? You know, do you reckon firms can still make? Can really capitalise on their efforts to attract and retain customers from this tournament?
Yeah, definitely. It's the second largest international football tournament behind the World Cup. So you've already got the major brands like McDonald's, Coca-Cola still as sponsors. I think this will be a really great opportunity for Betano as the official betting sponsor. It is what it is. I mean, it is the biggest European competition. So, yeah. I guess it's the platform's huge. That's pretty much.
And would you agree with that?
I would. I mean, yeah, just definitely. It is, like Callum said, it's the second largest international football tournament. It's just exposure for these brands. It is just massive.
And yeah, like you say with Betano, I think they've only just recently launched in the UK as well. I think it's like either last week or the week before. So, you know, big opportunity for them to build up their brand presence. So yeah, that's the end of that. But we've just got one last thing to quickly cover. Obviously, we Insider Sport is our beat, but we also do Payment Expert as well. So just we just want to ask you guys if you can give our listeners a bit of a rundown of what some of the biggest stories we've seen over both sites lately, or even features we've run as well. So yeah, Callum, if I can start with you, what are your two top picks in the past 7 days?
I did a lot of I'll go to Insider Sport first. I mean, I did a feature with Leandro Peterson from the Chief of Marketing of the Argentine Football Association. Really good of his time to speak with us on how that football federation's massive sponsorship spree, has just made them what, in his words, were the number one federation in football. So, and Payment Expert, I did a lot of stories on stable coins at the minute. They're surging in usage. Regulators in the US are kind of struggling to comprehend to speed up the process of regulation. And yeah, we got a few nice comments from payment company Neo on top of that as well. So yeah, just a lot of stable coin stuff from Payment Expert last week.
Good stuff. And Kieran, how about yourself?
So for Insider Sport, there's a big story in the RFL, who launched two new social media channels which are sort of dedicated to the women's game, in consultation with a strategic partner, IMG, which also sort of marks the beginning of the national the new national pyramid, which sort of gives teams sitting within the regional championships a chance to get promoted to the Betfred Super League, or the Women's Super League, shall I say. And then Payment Expert, just to round it up, there was a really interesting story about the Bitcoin twins, as people are sort of labelling them, who were the Gemini founders, Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss.
The two twins that Mark Zuckerberg claimed that they stole Facebook from, pretty much.
Yeah.
Ah, those guys, yeah.
So they made a $4.5 million Bitcoin investment into a ninth tier club called Real Bedford FC, and in one quote they said that they are eyeing up the Premier League.
It's kind of like a bit of a Wrexham attempt.
So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. It's quite interesting that of bridging the gap between our two sites as well, to be fair. And yeah, maybe we'll see if we'll see if they can rebound from the Facebook loss to turn Real Bedford into the next Man City. I think and for me, I'd say, I think I put out a feature yesterday with the Payments Association, some more coverage from Pay360, and when I went to that, talking about all sorts of stuff, open banking, AI, stable coins, all within the context of like potential political changes in the UK this year. And then, kind of building on that, with what you said about women's rugby, women's Super League, there's some interesting stuff going on with the women's football at the moment. They've renewed their media rights deals with the BBC and Sky, and apparently renewed their partnership with Barclays. So I think that just shows how big the women's sports scene is getting at the moment. A lot of interest in that. And so that's it from myself, Callum and Kieran. Thanks again to everyone who tuned into iGaming Daily, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to today's iGaming Daily podcast, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders magazine. Happy reading.